Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back to the show. I'm delighted to say that Chloe Watkins joins us back in studio. I would say the last 3-4 weeks have just been nothing short of mental for yourselves.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to think now. It's been nearly 3 weeks since we've played the World Cup final, so they've fairly flown by, but it's been, you know, it's not a bad complaint to have.
Have you had any kind of moment to stop and smell the roses yet?
I suppose this week has been a little bit quieter, but yeah, as I say, it's great to be getting the coverage and the recognition. So,
was there any kind of preparing for, like, because the thing we hear about, like, sort of kind of more established sports in this country, or the top echelons of like Premier League football or even rugby now at this stage, is that you'll have clubs offering media training for players and they're preparing for what public life has to offer you when you get to a certain level. I'd imagine when you're entering into hockey that there's no sense of that, that there's no sense that, well, I have to be, you know, minding what I say and minding my P's and Q's in front of the press, because this is suddenly a whole new thing that you have to kind of, it's been dealt on your doorstep, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think, you know, any of us have had media training, and it's probably quite obvious that we haven't had media training.
It seems like it's worked out better for you because you've given a more natural version of yourselves.
I suppose so. You kind of get that natural reaction and the emotion and that kind of side to it. So I guess it has helped us a bit, but you know, we're just kind of taking it in our stride at the moment. But yeah, no formal training as of yet.
Yeah, it might come along once the Olympics come around in a couple of years' time.
Yeah, you'll see robots us just.
Yeah, I'll be getting that. Yeah, no, just delighted to be there. Yeah, we're going to play. Yeah, I'm just going to, you know, try and take one game as it comes. We have to go back to the World Cup, obviously, because, as I say, I don't think anybody really expected Ireland to get to a World Cup final. And with the greatest respect, I don't think he went to the World Cup in England expecting to get to a World Cup final. Obviously, everybody thinks it'd be nice if you got there.
Yeah.
But take us back to that opening game in the pool. But stepping out before the USA game, the one thing, and it carried on throughout the course of the tournament, that stood out to people who watched that first match and before it, was how relaxed ye all looked. That's testament to the preparation that ye all put in and that Graham put in as a coach as well with ye in the lead into that. Was there that conversation had that, yeah, we're just going to be nice and relaxed about this. We don't know when another opportunity like this is going to come along. Just make the best of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It was down to our preparation that gave us that sense of calm. But, you know, we were ready to play that game 2 days before. You know, we were doing our homework on them. We had meetings and meetings on them all week. And we were really analysing each player. And it's like when you're studying for an exam and you kind of reach that point where you're like, I just want to sit the exam. It was like that 2 days before. And we just wanted to get out on the pitch because we felt like we were ready for them. And yeah, I think, you know, part of it was that we were just so delighted to be playing in a stadium like that. You don't often get to play in front of 10,000 people for hockey.
Does that take a lot of getting used? Is there any kind of period of adjustment in the first quarter, say, to kind of just adjust to your surroundings? Because huge step up from what you've used already.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, in the first quarter, we were all suffering from jelly legs and, you know, that kind of thing. And we came in and everyone was kind of like extra puffed and we were looking at each other, but everyone felt the same. It was just kind of getting that adrenaline rush to kick in.
Yeah.
And also the noise level is quite different as well, and it's difficult to get, you know, communication across the board on the pitch. So that was another factor to it that we had to kind of work on over the week.
Yeah, and picking up such a comprehensive victory first time round to get a 3-1 victory against the United States,
yeah,
it kind of set the benchmark for how the rest of the tournament will go, I guess.
It did. It settled us in a lot, and it definitely, you know, settled Graham as well. He would have said. So it was our dream start. And, you know, it was funny, though, because after each, I think, our USA game and our India game, we still felt like we hadn't played our absolute best. So we still felt like we had a little bit more to show, which was also motivating as well, you know. But, yeah, it was a dream start.
And by the time that India game had been and gone, I mean, you'd already become the first side to qualify for a quarterfinal and the only side to do it inside 2 games,
yeah,
which, given the calibre of teams we had in that tournament, as you've seen, especially with the Dutch, just is all the more remarkable an achievement in retrospect, really.
Yeah, it was. It was, you know, in previous tournaments in our Olympic qualifiers a few years ago, we finished top of the group and we didn't get the reward from it. So it was great this time round to skip the playoffs and get an extra day rest and to kind of prepare and to know that you're the first team, you know, as well in our hotel. There were a few teams staying there. So to know that you were safely through was also, you know, a great feeling as well.
A lot of people looked at that England game as not from an Irish perspective anyway, it certainly wasn't for them because they needed to pick up a win to get through to the next phase.
Yeah.
But for yourselves, people were saying, you know, the term you use is dead rubber. I kind of think that that was used by yourselves as an extra game to work out the kinks and another step up, because you mentioned the influence of the crowd and the size of the stadium, etc. Like, you had a full house there for that England match, and the noise, even compared to what you had against India or the USA, would have been 3-4-fold to what you've already faced. I mean, that must have been just a remarkable spectacle to play in the middle of against the hosts and against such a hugely backed, both in terms of people and in terms of finance side.
Yeah, it was. You know, I know it was, from a results point of view, it didn't matter to us, but, you know, it's hard to not step out and want to beat an England side. You know, it's a big game for us no matter what. So, yeah, it was to kind of tailor all of those things, how we'd react to play in front of 10,000. It was a packed stadium and it was just, it was incredible. It was impossible to get, you know, to shout at the player next to you. You couldn't hear anything. So it was great to get that experience in before the weekend of the finals the following week. And, you know, we did okay in the game. It wasn't our, by any means, our best performance now. But at the same time, you know, it was something that we could work from and something that we could look at and kind of make changes to as well. So it was a good experience from that point of view as well.
It was kind of obvious as the tournament progressed that you're obviously benefiting from more time together. That's been, I suppose, one of the key phrases that we've heard since the tournaments, is that you don't necessarily want a whole pile of money to have the best gear in the world. You just want to have more time together. I mean, that seems to be the key thing for this squad.
It is. Contact time is really invaluable to us. I mean, we kind of got together towards the beginning of June, I think it was, for the whole squad that was there. And the transformation we made over those 6 weeks was absolutely incredible, you know. And you could see it after each series and after each, you know, training weekend. We felt like we were getting better and it was just amazing to see that. And, you know, there's, you know, we were all thinking, God, if we were centralised for even a few months, what could we do? Because it really does make all the difference. And it's what these other teams have advantage over us.
Yeah, how does the squad use that time? Obviously, it's incumbent upon it to use it better than other sides maybe would, because it's so limited the time you have together. Mm. What kind of preparation do you put into it together? What kind of stuff does Graham bring to the table for those contact periods for the squad?
It's fairly full on once we get together. I know, like, we were away quite a bit. We had a lot of matches in that period. So it's kind of trying to get that peak to happen at the right time as well. So we would do a lot of tactical meetings, a lot of meetings in our lines, say midfield, forward, defence as well. Mm. And it's that perspective as well. But also the culture and just the communication side of things is a huge part of it. And just having that time together to kind of really refine and just work out the kinks, I suppose, if there are any, is really invaluable. Yeah. And then, of course, for Graham to get his, you know, different ways, different tactics of getting us to play, it's really important for us to have time to kind of, you know, digest it.
Yeah. Last year or so, you and Anna Flanagan have played over Bloemendaal in Holland.
Yeah.
Because obviously we've seen how the Dutch are at hockey. And we've even recruited from a male perspective. Alexander Cox has come in as the male head coach, having worked with the women's side with Holland. How has playing in Holland differed to kind of, I suppose, playing for Hermes Monkstown, etc.?
I suppose, yeah, it's a lot more supported over there. I mean, that club alone would have a huge list of sponsors themselves. Mm. So, you know, you have more time together. We would have trained 4 times a week with club and then have your game on the weekend. So it's more full time. And you do video and all that kind of stuff that you would do in a national program here. But they're able to do it because, you know, you just have that extra bit of support to allow you the time. The intensity of the game over there is obviously a huge thing. So your sessions were flat out, you know, every time you stepped on the pitch. So it was great to get that exposure as well.
How close to full time would you be over there?
I worked part time just because what we were getting wasn't enough to live off. But, you know, we were getting supported from accommodation point of view and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's still a bit to go. It's different from the men's game over there, definitely, because they're completely full-time.
Getting to even up sticks, though, and experience a different country. is a brilliant thing, especially if you're doing it quasi-professionally, you know, to work over there, to live over there. Give us a sense of where Bloemendaal is, like where are they based in Holland? Are they close to any big cities around that over there?
Yeah, they'd be close to Amsterdam. Okay. It's about 20 or 30 minutes outside Amsterdam towards the coast. So it's a lovely beach kind of city. It's a lot smaller though than obviously Amsterdam itself. We lived in Amsterdam and then commuted out. So
it's a tough life, isn't
it? Yeah, I can't complain too much. It was great, but again, we were taking time out from our careers, so it was kind of it was you know, weighing up that risk.
Yeah, being over there with Anna as well, it kind of helps that you didn't go isolated, you didn't go on your own. You have your own little cell, I suppose, of the two of you. Do you kind of stick together while you're over there? Do you find the need to even separate and go, I don't, like, the last thing I want to see is year one again. I don't know how that dynamic would work, is it?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was great to have her there, especially at the beginning. I mean, the Dutch are very direct people, let's say. It was certainly a tough year, you know, it was a big challenge. So they kind of look after their own a little bit more, so you really have to earn their respect. So it was great to kind of, you know, have her there when you come home after a tough day of training and you just have a little bit of a rant or kind of discuss things. But yeah, I mean, like,
did you become the troublesome foreigners in the squad?
Not at all, not at all. There was also an Argentinian girl that played for them and she lived with us as well. Okay. So yeah, it was great to experience all the different cultures.
How much of that were you able to bring back into the Irish setup? Or does the last thing the squad want to hear is, oh Christ, these two were over in Holland. Oh, we do things over in Bloemendaal. There's none of that going on.
No, we were a bit aware of it, but we probably would have got slagged if we had started any of that now. The girls in the team would have no qualms in taking you down like that.
That team bond thing is huge, and it was really evident. Like, either side of matches, even from talking to like members of the squad since the tournament, from talking to the squad, because thankfully you were so open during it that we were able to kind of have a bit of contact with the squad during the course of the tournament, it's really obvious that everybody got on. Mm-hmm. And there's no, like, it might be different behind the scenes, I don't know. But it's on the outside, everybody gets on. There's no, you know, cliques. There's no necessarily kind of little groups in the squad that don't get on with each other. Everybody seems to have this remarkable team ethic about them.
Yeah, no, that is the genuine story behind it. You know, there's no cliques, as you say. Everybody does get on, but it's kind of how it has happened. You know, there's very little room for high maintenance people in a high performance environment. There really is. You get found out after a while, and you know, everybody had to kind of take that personal responsibility and get themselves right. And we always say, like, it's a room of mirrors. If you're, you know, don't start shouting at somebody else unless you have your own house in order. So we have become a very self-driven team, and accountability was a huge thing that we had talked about in previous years, and just being able to have honest conversations with each other. And you only do that by getting to know each other better, you know, having been able to call somebody out on something and vice versa. So that is something we have worked on hugely.
You're something of a cool penalty taker, it turns out. And over the course of a couple of the knockout games. That's like, everybody, even if they were being introduced to hockey really late on, they look at the shootouts and just think, Christ, that is even more nerve-wracking than a penalty in football or Gaelic football or even hurling. Like, it's the fact that you have those seconds to build up and kind of have to take on the keeper. The mind boggles as to what goes through your head from the moment that whistle goes until the moment you strike the ball.
I think,
do you have a plan? Like, because most penalty takers in football go, I'll hit it low to the keeper's right, or I'll hit it low to the keeper's left. What is there a plan in hockey? Or can there be?
Well, you can. You don't always have to, but I personally do have a plan. And certain key things that I like to hit, you know, in order to get it done, I know I need to kind of sell a dummy to try and get the keeper to commit, that kind of thing, and really change pace. A few just key things that I want to try and get in.
Give the keeper the eyes? Is it a harder thing to do with them? You have the helmet on?
It is a harder thing to do, yeah. You don't know what they're thinking now, but like, our keeper did exceptionally well at them, and it really took the pressure off us.
She's freakishly good, Shirley.
She's incredible, yeah.
Like, it's absolutely freakishly good how good our keeper is. Like,
she is. She was brilliant. And, you know, you do take confidence from that when you're standing there and she's just making saves and you're like, okay, you know, the pressure, she just takes the pressure off you straight away. So. Yeah. That was invaluable to us, really.
The final we have to touch on, because, like, everybody, I don't think anybody expected people to go and beat Holland.
Yeah.
Because they are just the capo di tutti capi of sides in international hockey. Like,
yeah.
Did you have any expectation going into the final? You'd obviously would have built up some, given the run that you'd had.
Yeah, I mean, we're a very competitive group of girls, so you can't, you know, after our semi-final, we were on cloud nine, obviously, but very quickly we said, hang on, we're going for gold here. And people were laughing at us, but we said, hang on, like, why not? But I think, you know, the Dutch are professionals. They have been, you know, I think they've won it the most times out of any country. They're undoubtedly the number one side in women's hockey. So it's where we aspire to get to. It's going to take a few years, but we've just made strides already. So that's the next level we aspire to get to. And we wanted to go out and show them that we do mean business and earn some respect on the international stage. I think we did do that. They were talking to us afterwards and they were impressed. I think it was slightly, you know.
Second half particularly, I think you gave a really good account of yourself.
We did. There was a period of about 8 minutes that we conceded, I think, 4 goals. And it was a lack of concentration. And if you do that against the Dutch, they punish you straight away. Yeah. And that's the level of, you know, that's the level you're competing against. You really can't make mistakes. So we didn't make many over the week, but then if you have a few in that game, it's just goal.
Yeah, they seem all the more pronounced when they happen against a side of that calibre, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. You're more found out and you have less room for error, really.
The homecoming, because everything surrounding it was a bit mad, let's just say. Starting off and getting on the plane, like we see the picture on screen there of you on stage in Dame Street.
Yeah.
Like even the fact that you're on stage in Dame Street and there's thousands there to welcome you home, does it still compute now? Do you still look back at that site now and think, oh, geez, was that us up there?
I know, absolutely, yeah. It was definitely one of our, you know, the memories that we're not going to forget, that's going to stick out in our mind, because we were inside in City Hall and at a reception at about 2 o'clock, and you know, you could look out the window and there was nobody on Dame Street. So we were kind of thinking, what is going on? Why have they done this? And then suddenly at 2:30, thereabouts, it just blew up. And that was really the first time we got to see the amount of people hockey had reached and really seen the impact of the World Cup. That was the first time we kind of hit us. So yeah, going out on the stage was absolutely incredible.
Has there been a tangible sense of the impact that the run has had?
I guess just people talking about hockey. Now it's essentially a mainstream sport now. And that was probably the biggest thing for us. I mean, yeah, we wanted success and this and that, but actually getting the sport out there and promoting it, and, you know, women's sport as well, it's been incredible to see the reaction and how the country has embraced it and how the country reacted to it as well. And that was really the most amazing thing for us.
The immediate homecoming, the immediate getting off the plane, because I want to touch on the Shane Ross stuff to a degree as well.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about his timing of the announcement of they'd suddenly found an extra €1.5 million down the couch in terms of government buildings to hand out to sport? Because like the reaction from yourselves was kind of heartfelt, and it almost seemed as if you were being not necessarily used, but it was a bit opportunistic on the minister's behalf maybe to kind of use the timing of the homecoming to announce that everybody's going to get an extra piece of the pie now.
Yeah, I guess in hindsight it was. At the time we were still in an absolute, you know, dreamland. We didn't really know what was going on, and yeah, we got off the plane, obviously emotions were high, but I think the way it was delivered was probably a bit unclear for us. And, you know, there are people in our squad that have been in 8, 10 years, 12 years doing this. And, you know, you never think of a sum of money that big being contributed to, like, hockey. I know it wasn't entirely for hockey, but that was just what got to us, really. It was, like, the recognition, the immediate recognition, and the funding that our sport was going to get. Now, I know it's 2 Olympic sports, and we got 500,000, and, you know, we are extremely grateful for that amount as well. It's more than we've ever had. So, yeah, we can't really complain, but it is probably, in comparison to other budgets, still quite small.
Yeah, even compared to, because the Great Britain one is one we touched upon a little bit earlier. I mean, yeah, that's the one that, like, everybody points towards, because they had the goal, obviously, with a number of sports, especially heading towards 2012,
yeah,
of winning medals. So they just ploughed cash,
yeah,
into it in the millions. Now, we're a smaller country, hockey's a smaller sport, there isn't necessarily the money to throw it that way. But
yeah,
even in terms of, I guess, percentages,
yeah,
you'd want to see a little bit more thrown your way, even if just to get a pitch in which you can all play upon to have a national centre. That's the one thing that struck me in the aftermath. It wasn't that anybody wanted a massive hockey complex out in Monkstown. It wasn't that anybody wanted a joint centre of excellence. You just wanted a pitch that was FIH approved.
Exactly, yeah. I think those things would be amazing if we could get them over the line. I know, obviously, you know, GB got the gold in the Olympics before, and like, you know, we aren't... we know how it works. You need success to build funding, to build interest, and that's part and parcel of it all. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, hockey is the third highest participation sport worldwide, which people don't realise. And obviously in Ireland it's slightly smaller because we have other sports like the rugby and the football and the GAA, which are great. But it is just to get a little bit more recognition because it is a worldwide sport, and it's, you know, there's room to really achieve on the world stage. So it's, yeah, getting a home for hockey would be unbelievable, and it would just allow us that contact time to train together, I guess, as well.
It just seems like a most basic thing. Just a pitch. Just give us a pitch.
Yeah.
One that doesn't have bits and pieces that are kind of cobbled together from other ones, you know?
Exactly.
In terms of preparation for the Olympics, because it's still a bit of a road to go before mm-hmm. we can start talking about Tokyo in and of itself, when does the actual qualification period for that start now?
It's either May or June of next year, so we haven't been told by the FIH where we're going to compete, but yeah, both tournaments are May or June, so we just have to wait and see where we're going.
Does the World Cup just gonna have any impact on that?
It does for the second part of it. It's obviously not a straightforward process.
As we found out last time.
Exactly, yeah. So we have to get through the first tournament, and then due to our ranking now, we're eighth in the world after the World Cup, which is still unbelievable. I can't get my head around that. But that's going to give us a home draw, and it's going to give us a better draw. We're probably going to play a lower ranked team now. So it has really greatly increased our chances of qualifying. So.
Yeah. And there seems to be a sense that you want to actually get this over the line. Not necessarily that the World Cup didn't matter comparatively, but, you know, the build up to 2016, there'd been that disappointment in not getting through the wheels for 2020 were set in motion almost before the 2016 Olympics came around, really.
Yeah, it is. It's obviously, we take it cycle by cycle, and we threw everything at the last one and narrowly missed out. But we learnt lessons from it, and thankfully those, you know, it showed in our last performance in the World Cup cycle. So we're really motivated for this Olympic cycle. I think, you know, it's exciting to have a medal prospect in our heads now. And I know we have to qualify first, but yeah, I think a medal is going to be in all of our minds.
Seeing the men's side qualify from 4 years ago as well, that obviously would have, you know, been a little bit of a stinger too, because you're seeing, you know, the squad go over there, you're seeing the families go along with them. You've got a family yourself that's steeped in hockey. You know, your brother Gareth's involved.
And yeah.
Your dad was an Irish international as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was nothing else you were going to end up doing, was there? Really?
I did a bit of everything when I was younger. I just loved everything, but I was never
Hockey's
forced into it.
Hockey's the family trade, Chloe.
Yeah, they forced me. I did just happen to love it, so I think they were delighted about that now. Mm. But yeah, they've obviously, you know, been involved all their lives, which I grew up watching my brother play as well. So it definitely was an influence on me, I guess.
So now you've got something to hang over him, seeing as you grew up watching her. You can just go, well, you know, rock a finalist over here.
Yeah.
You know? That's pretty much what you've got.
It's bragging rights, that's all it is.
That's what it is. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, not only for coming in this evening, obviously enough, and giving up your time, but also for the unexpected kind of focus to the summer that you gave us sporting-wise, because everybody was talking about the hurling and everybody was talking about the World Cup, and suddenly we had the Women's Hockey World Cup blow up and become this amazing thing that everybody got behind from an Irish perspective, which we didn't necessarily have as a country, something to back this summer. And you very much gave that to the country, so thank you for that as well.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Chloe.
Thank you.
Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.